Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Lobino, and I'm here with Mike Neff. And Neff, we're going to do an instant analysis podcast, trying to get this out before the Xfinity race later today. We're going to recap the first two races at Darlington over the weekend. Neff, I don't know about you, but I was highly entertained through both races. I know we'll obviously get into the the nuts and bolts of both races, but overall, two races in the same week at one track hasn't been done in a very long time. I'm highly in favor. I like it a lot.
Two races at one track has never been done.
Yeah.
How did you not remember that after Mike Joy told you that 108 times last night? Dude, he's a pit bull, man. He latches on to a fact and he does not let it go. But yeah, it was, I was entertained. Let's say it that way. I've been pushing for midweek races for a long time, and last night did not disappoint.
No.
We had comers, we had goers, we had drama, we had strategy. I mean, it was everything you wanted in a cup race. And I hate that Mother Nature stepped in with a little bit left, but I don't know that it was going to make a difference. We might have seen a little shuffle there at the front if we had a restart. But in the grand scheme of things, I was wholly entertained. I was also loving Sunday's race, the fact that we got to race in some daylight at Darlington. Is we can never have enough of that. I wish we ran the Southern 500 in the daytime on Monday like the old days, but they don't do that anymore. But yeah, it totally happy with the outcome. Charlotte's got some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned a lot of different topics there that I definitely want to hit on more in depth. There's a lot of ways we could go with this at the beginning, but I feel like we got to start with the elephant in the room, and that's Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott. Last night, what turned out to be the final caution, because then rain came down and ended the race 20 laps short. Kyle Busch was running, him and Chase were battling for second, I believe, right behind Denny Hamlin, the race leader. Kyle Busch tried to come up the track, and when he went up, because Kevin Harvick was coming with a big run, and so if Kevin gets to Kyle's outside, then Kyle, screw it, he's going backwards. Right. Kind of like a freight train on the outside. So Kyle came up, he wasn't clear, there was still, I don't know, quite a bit. He misjudged it by about a foot. He took ownership. He took ownership of it after on the Zoom call with media, even after the race, talking to Alan Gustafson, who I thought it was funny. You had a whole bunch of the number nine team waiting for Kyle Busch outside his car, just staring him down when it was undecided if NASCAR was going to get going or not. But I thought, obviously Kyle made a mistake. Chase topped it off by giving him the old bird, which that was like an exaggerated. Yeah, an exaggerated bird. He followed him as Kyle went by.
Yeah.
So this is good for the sport, though. I mean, you have the most popular driver versus the most hated driver.
Absolutely. That is everything that the sport wants and needs from a interest standpoint. Let's put it that way. And you get a rivalry of arguably the two biggest teams in the sport, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Stuart Haas is in there, but Hendrick and Gibbs are pretty much the two biggest beasts in the sport. And depending on what you read on social media, Hendrick is the big white hat and Gibbs is the big black hat. But Kyle fessed up to it. I think he was in a tight box there, that he knew he had a window to get in between those cars, that prudently he probably shouldn't have tried to take advantage of, but he also knew that if he didn't, like you mentioned, he was going to get freight train. And so he saw the momentum that Chase had, he checked his mirror to see where Kevin was, and in his mind, he mentally thought Chase was by him. As he went to turn up, he wasn't. Then it was too late. So I take Kyle at his word. I've seen enough of him in situations like this where if he took the guy out on purpose, he'd tell you he took the guy out on purpose. And the fact that in essence is his old team, or a bunch of guys from his old team when he used to run at Hendrick, that he has relationships with those guys and he wouldn't want to do that on purpose. At the same time, he's a fool if he doesn't think retaliation is going to come. I don't think you'll see it at Charlotte. I think it'll be at Bristol. And, you know, you never know, it may end up waiting around till Martinsville or something. But he, laps were running down, and if he didn't get in that gap, I think his chances at winning a race were going to be nil. So he took that shot, and unfortunately for the 9 team and for Chase, he ended up against the wall. The one thing I didn't like about that, and you know me, I always argue about it, Cruz needs to stay out of that. It needs to be driver and driver. And the fact that Chase, I'm sure he had to go to the infield care center, but after that, the rest of his team should have been away from that pit, and he should have been the one there sitting on the wall waiting for Kyle to get out of that car, and then they should have talked it out. I respect Gustafson. I know that he and Kyle have got a relationship, but just my take on those kind of confrontations, drivers should settle and crew should stay out.
See, I agree with you on that, but I don't mind Gustafson being down there. Obviously, him and Kyle have a relationship. He used to crew chief Kyle when Kyle drove the 5 car. And Chase, like you said, probably at the infield care center, definitely had to go there. So, yeah, I mean, look, this is good for NASCAR. And everything over the past 3-4 days have been good for NASCAR, I think. Outside of maybe the rain short race.
Outside of rain, huh?
Yeah. But when it comes to Kyle, let's face it, I mean, he's an aggressive driver, but he's not a driver that's just going to intentionally take you out. And he's not, he's one of the best talents we've ever seen. So, obviously misjudged it. I 100% believe Kyle when he says that. And he's going to, like you said, going to have to pay with the repercussions, because we do have 2 short tracks coming up in the next couple weeks at Bristol and Martinsville. And they're going to be running at the front, I'm sure, at Martinsville and probably Bristol. It's Kyle Busch's wheelhouse. So, Hendrick, Gibbs, I mean, this kind of reminds me a little bit of Kenseth versus Penske a few years back. You had 2 big teams, you know, obviously going at it with Kenseth Logano, Kenseth Kozlowski. So this is good stuff.
Absolutely, man.
And NASCAR needs this. We need rivalries. We don't have enough of them. Haven't had a lot of them in many years. So I'm all for it. You know, hopefully. Do you think Chase, like, Kyle's gonna see this coming? He knows something's coming. He said it.
Oh yeah, he said that.
Yeah, but do you think Chase just makes his life hell, or do you think he takes him out?
See, that's, we'll wait and see. I really think we'll wait and see. If you go on Chase's history, I don't even think he'd make his life hell. I think they'll talk and it'll be done and it'll be over. In all honesty, I think he's to a point in his career where he needs to start standing up for himself more. And similar to kind of the Logano fire suit thing in Pocono, it's time for him to retaliate. And if he doesn't, I think he's asking to be taken advantage of.
So I kind of agree with you on that, but I kind of don't, too, because let's flash back to the fall 2017 at Martinsville. Everyone remembers that race. If you're Denny Hamlin or Chase Elliott, you definitely remember that race. You know, Denny Hamlin, he took Chase Elliott out, kind of like Kyle did last night at Martinsville. Chase wrecked while leading. It looked like he was going to go on to win his first career race. And then 2 weeks later in the penultimate race of the year, Denny Hamlin is dominating that race. Chase Elliott doesn't give him any room on the back stretch, what was then the back stretch, now the front stretch, and puts him in the wall. So, you know, he cut him off, didn't give him any room. Denny dominated, doesn't go to Homestead because he wrecked. So, I don't know. Chase definitely has had a few of these incidents now and where he hasn't set up for himself. But I think he's going to for this one. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't see him intentionally wrecking Kyle, nor do I think he should, because that's just a black eye, I feel like, for him. But you do have to stand up for yourself. So I could see either way. But I know Martinsville and Bristol are going to be interesting.
Yeah, and man, that Phoenix deal, I still argued with a lot of people on that I think that was Denny running out of talent more than Chase doing anything. I felt like Chase did what he needed to do, but I felt like Denny had it in his mind what had happened at Martinsville, and he was thinking about it too much and kind of ran out of talent on his own. But I'm with you. I mean, you run the risk of sullying your reputation a little bit and maybe losing some of those most popular driver votes. But at the same time, if they drop the rag at Martinsville and you go in the first turn and you send Kyle Busch into the wall, you gain a whole lot of those most popular driver votes.
Right.
So it's six of one, half dozen of the other. I feel like he's at that point in his career where he's established himself as one of the best racers in the sport, and it's now time to establish that you're not going to take crap from people.
And obviously, we're not going to have fans for a while at the track, but if there was fans last night, oh my God. Like this, it would have been crazy, because you would have had Chase Elliott, the crowd go crazy for him, Kyle Busch getting booed like Denny Hamlin did at Martinsville a few years back. It would have been chaos. So
it'd be like when Kyle dumped Junior at Richmond.
Right. And Kyle, I mean, let's be honest, he's won on interviews with this over the past couple of years, especially in, 2018, when it was the 10-year anniversary of it. He didn't want to do that, and he didn't mean to do it. So he had to be protected going out of Richmond that night.
Yep.
But, Neff, I feel like we've talked about that a lot. We got a lot to get to, so we can't hinder on it too much. But let's talk about – we got Denny Hamlin. I picked him to win Sunday's race. He was good on Wednesday night. Not great. The first time he got the lead was with 12 laps to go, and that was via a pit call where Chris Gabehart left him out because he ran out of tires, which is another topic we'll get into here in a second. Good call by Gabehart ultimately, because the next lap or two is when that incident happened with Kyle and Chase. But look, Toyota's been kind of down this year. I don't want to say they're off, like way off. But to a degree, they are, especially Kyle. Like, Kyle was 24th at the end of the first stage last night. But good for Toyota to get another win this year. I mean, they've got two wins, so it looks like they're moving in the right direction, especially because Eric Jones and Truex also had good nights.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I agree with Kyle. They talked to him in pre-race about he felt like they were lacking this year, and he just said he felt like they're off on speed. And if you look at the cars on a track, I would tend to agree with him on that. Mm-hmm. They're getting wins and they're getting good finishes by pit calls, not by speed. And that's not normally how they go about their business. So that's the thing where TRD is obviously going to have to get back to the grindstone and squeeze a few more horsepower out of these low horsepower packages. It's early, and we're going to hopefully see a whole bunch more of these midweek-type races and go to some tracks we don't normally go to, which could be really exciting. But it's definitely concerning if you're in the Toyota camp that the amount of money that they spend on R&D and on the power development and to be lacking in horsepower is something that usually is not a problem for them.
Right, and also we got to remember now, going into this year, we weren't sure, if some teams got behind, I'm not saying Toyota specifically, but any team, what would they do as the months and the races went on, because the next gen car coming out, what was supposed to be next year. Now that's 2 years away. So, I mean, I don't know. They've got to be worried not only about this year, but next year, because Chevrolet's definitely improved. I would say Hendrick is probably the... I mean, they only have one win, but they're probably the best team right now on raw speed. You could throw Harvick in there from Stewart Haas, and last night Clint Bowyer ran really well. You could also throw Penske in there, but they've been out. I mean, the first Darlington race, they were out to lunch. So, I think Toyota will be fine. Denny Hamlin's got two wins, one of them by strategy, the other one's Daytona, where he's probably the best driver at Daytona right now. I'm not worried about him at all. I think they'll turn it around And look, Kyle and Martin Truex are among the best drivers in the sport. And Eric Jones at Darlington, he's got the best average finish of everyone, 5.4. So, not surprised that they ran well last night.
I'm a little worried about Truex right now. I mean, obviously, we've seen Kyle's been struggling a little bit. But Truex, I haven't seen anything out of that team this year to give me hope.
Well,
and that's something where I'm like, they've been a fixture at the front for several years. And now
They can't finish races.
You see them start off. You see them start off at the back, and you're like, they're just going to come forward. And then you look at the standings 20 laps into the run, and they've lost two spots. And it's not what you expect out of that team. I know you got a new crew chief. I know things have been changed around a little bit from the championship runs, but they have some work to do, along with the whole Toyota camp. But they've definitely got some work to do to get back to championship contenders.
I mean, the first Darlington race on Sunday, he was off. He was terrible the first couple runs. But then they ended up rebounding at 6th, his best finish of the year. Last night, he was good at the beginning, really good. He moved up, methodically through the field after starting, 14th or 15th? And then he came up, and then he went back. He finished 10th. So, yeah, Truex, they just can't finish races. We saw it at Phoenix as well. They had a fast car. Fontana finished 14th. They had a bad pit stop. Vegas. They've only led 31 laps this year. Kyle's only led 14, so the speed's definitely off. Still not worried, though. There's a lot of time left. But, I mean, let's face it, we got a lot of races coming up here in a really short amount of time. And there's not going to be much work done at the shop because of all these races. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting seeing going forward. But, Neff, I talked about the strategy call from Gabe Hart. And I know Denny's tires were only, 6-8 laps older than the field. And he didn't have any more fresh shuts. He had a scuff set, but the lug nuts weren't glued on him yet, re-glued. So this brings up the whole tire allotment conversation, because I thought last night, and it was only a 300-mile race, but seeing teams, they had only 9 or 10 sets of tires, run out of tires and making it a real tire management race, I love that.
I do too, but at the same time, and we see this all the time in the Cup Series, they tend to get a little willy-nilly with things when they think they have plenty. So you had at least one, if not two, pit stops in there where they had 10 or fewer laps on tires, and they came in and changed. In a normal deal where if you knew you had to stretch your tire allotment, you wouldn't be changing that fast.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. And I mentioned when we were talking before we got on air, I saw a tweet come out from Chris Owens last night that said for the Southern 500, he wants to see him do the 750 horsepower package and 7 sets of tires. Personally, I think that would be amazing. That might be a little few two tires to go 500 miles. But at the same time, it would force these guys – it forces them to save their tires. And, I mean, legitimately save their tires. You get a lot of these guys talking about tire management, and they're still running, throttle all the way around a track. They may be backing off some, but they're not pulling all the way out of it. And that's not, at least in my opinion, not real tire management. You get a deal where they're lifting at the flag stand and not picking up into the middle of one and two, then you're talking about guys that are trying to manage tires. So, it would be cool to see. I don't know that they would ever hamstring them that much on tires, but I enjoy a good tire strategy battle on these older worn out tracks, which fortunately we're getting more of these. It seems like fewer of the tracks are getting repaved quickly anymore. And I'm hoping that we can continue down that path to where we start seeing more Vegas's and California's instead of Charlotte's, where God loves Charlotte will do anything and everything to do the best they can, but they got that last repave before they figured out they didn't want to do these high-tech polymer things, and their surface is over 10 years old, I'm pretty sure, and it still hasn't worn out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the surface in Charlotte is amazing. At the same time, it's lousy for racing. So I'm hoping that they turn around and do some diamond grinding or something to get that thing where it needs to be.
Yeah, for sure. Tire management races like your Californias, your Chicagos, although unfortunately that's probably off. It could be off the schedule forever. Darlington, obviously. Places that are hard on tires, I think, create some of the best racing. Even Sonoma. Obviously last year's race sucked, but that's a place where the asphalt's worn and you have comers and goers. And we saw that both races at Darlington, comers and goers. I enjoy races like that. So, seven sets for over 500 miles is probably too few, not anywhere, but at most places, especially Darlington. But it is a good idea. I think they'll probably get 12 or more like they did on Sunday for a 400-mile race where they still use them all. It's a lot of money. And I mean, it is a cost savings if you wanted to cut some tires for teams, especially the smaller teams, but for all teams. And we'll get into cost savings here again in a little bit, too, because I want to get your take.
You saved a bunch of money on these races.
Yeah, I want to get your take on, before we talk to midweek races, practice, no practice. So, forever, really, especially recently, they've started to cut practice a little bit. Like this year, the Xfinity Series, they have a 55-minute session and then like a 27-minute session. I don't know why 27 minutes, but regardless, that's what it is. So they've cut down on that. Same with trucks. And even Cup isn't as what it used to be, where it's like three practices in one weekend. After what we saw this weekend with no practices for two races, no qualifying, we'll talk about the invert, but let's focus on practice. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm all for no practice, but maybe one 30-minute session every week. I think that's good. Or we don't need all this, you know, allotted time towards practice.
Completely agree. I am very anti-practice in the asphalt racing world. We see so much of it at the local short track level where these folks they'll run their programs later in the night just to give these teams a chance to practice. And it's like you go to the greatest dirt track racers in the world, go to the world finals at Charlotte, they get five hot laps.
Yeah.
They go qualify and they go race. That's it. On a track that changes every single night. These asphalt tracks get repaved and stay the same for 15 years. There's no reason that we should be having that much practice. And I think this was actually a validation of that we took these guys off the truck and ran them into turn one, and 39 out of 40 did fine the first time through. So they have their cars in. We've got all these simulations. We've got all this computer work. I mean, everything that's at their disposal gives them the ability to have these cars set 95% correct when they get to the track. And there's nothing wrong with having to work on the car a little bit and make some adjustments. So I am fully on board with the no practice idea. I am with you that 30 minutes is probably good. Gives them a chance to check their pit road speed. Maybe, you know, they get make a quick run, make sure nothing's leaking. There's no nothing that's drastically wrong. And they can maybe make one set of changes. But just kind of let them knock off the rust and make sure the car is ready to go. But I got no problem with a very limited practice session and let's go race. And I'm with you. It saves the teams a bunch of money because of just not having to burn through tires and fuel and having extra people at the track to make adjustments and build shocks and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we saw it almost 2 years ago now at the Brickyard 400, and that wasn't on purpose. It rained all weekend in both the Xfinity and Cup race. Xfinity had a practice, at least part of one, but Cup did not. And they threw the rag on Monday, and, you know, you had comers and goers, and it was one of the better Brickyard races in recent memory. So as far as Darlington, you definitely had some comers and goers. I think it separates the men from the boys in some cases, you know. And then you have some surprises, too, that might run well. Like Tyler Reddick, he came from the back twice on Sunday. And, you know, we'll talk about Sunday here in a little bit. But, I mean, as soon as the green flag dropped, him and Randall must have done, you know, a good job setting that car up because he went to the front. So I'm in favor of no, you know, limited practices. Like I said, 30 minutes or so. And that leads into qualifying, too, because I feel like you could say, because of this invert last night, that qualifying is, I don't want to say overrated, but maybe?
I'm torn on qualifying. I like it because it rewards guys that, you know, they can go fast, and you see some amazing efforts. I mean, I'll never forget when Ryan Newman went 14-9 at Bristol and the world went crazy. And, you know, and you get to see some things like that. But for the most part, I think that we, in the current environment, we could just as easily set the field by a pill draw and be fine. I really liked the way they did it for Sunday, where they had groups of owner's points, 1 to 20 or 1 to 15, 16 to 30, and then the rest. And you did your pill draws there, so it kept you around the guys that you're probably running with on a regular basis anyway to start the race. The same time, I loved last night where you had the complete invert of it, and you had guys that were the class of the field on Sunday starting mid-pack, mm-hmm. and having to work your way through it, and some guys could and some guys couldn't. And I thought that added a level of intrigue that was new and different. So I understand qualifying. I appreciate qualifying. But again, when we're trying to make these shows shorter from a weekend perspective, that's a great way to eliminate a whole bunch of time. Because again, part of your whole practice thing was to practice for qualifying and then practice for the race. So if you don't qualify, you don't have to have qualifying practice. Mm-hmm. So you eliminate that again. So yeah, I understand the qualifying thing and I appreciate it, but at the same time, where we are with the sport today, I think we can do pill draw and be more entertaining when the rag drops.
I totally agree. It'll be way more entertaining. And obviously, like your local dirt track or whatever, they have qualifying heats. We kind of tried that a couple years ago in the Xfinity Series. Did not work. So I don't want that. But a pill draw, I've loved last night invert. Because like you said, you had guys coming from mid-pack. You had Kevin Harvick, Alex Bowman finished first and second on Sunday. Started 19th and 20th yesterday. I don't, however, if we're going to continue doing this, and we're going to talk about this for a few minutes, and then in a couple weeks it's going to be gone, because we're going to be back to regular racing here before too long, as we start making up these races. I'd like the top 20, but I don't feel like there should be a set number, you know, going into the race. I feel like maybe there should be a pill draw. Yeah.
You can't have that be set, because you end up having people that know they can't finish at the front start trying to sandbag back to get to that spot.
Yeah.
And you don't need those shenanigans going on in the middle of the pack, because that's around a bunch of cars that aren't handling their best. That's why they're in the middle of the pack. And if you start getting guys that are trying to slow down and play games around cars that are struggling handling-wise, you're begging for cautions, and we don't need that going on.
Right. So maybe like 20 is a good number, because it splits the field pretty much right in half. Maybe 20 to 25, or you can also do it based on owner points too, or just, you know, points in general. But I like the previous race aspect of it, especially.
Yeah, I like that because you're earning it.
Yeah.
I understand that you've earned your points, but at the same time, prize money's on points, and we do some pit selection on points sometimes, and there's too much stuff tied to points. Let's go on a performance basis where you get to start the race.
And also, I mean, once the season gets started, you know, the points are starting to shape up now. And, you know, obviously you have Matt Kenseth, Ryan Newman, and some guys in the back because they've missed races. But you'll have the same guys starting at the front every week if, say, you do 20-25. Because there's going to be some change, but not a whole lot. So I think a random pill draw the week that you're at the event, you know, maybe even after practice, you know, you don't know, would be the way to go. But that kind of leads, and look.
Or how about this? Pill draw during driver intros.
That'd be cool.
How cool is that? Your pit stall selection, kind of like we do with Xfinity and Truck sometimes, your pit stall is based on your previous race's finish. That's when you pick your pit stall based on previous race, but your starting spot is pill draw during driver intro. I think that would be phenomenal.
For sure. But also, like, you know, we're talking a lot about cutting time away from the track for these teams. Now, on the flip side, tracks aren't going to like that, because you want a full weekend event, you know, when you go to, obviously there's some places they're cutting down now, like Pocono. I mean, this year was going to be a full week, so they weren't going to have any shortage, but they were cutting it down from two weekends to one. Although they're making up for it that week, but regardless, you know, other tractors, you know, Martinsville, for instance, in the fall and in the spring, they only have a 2-day show. There's days starting to get eliminated. Tracks aren't going to like that, but also like Martinsville, I'll just throw that out. For instance, not that fan friendly of a track. And there's other tracks out there like that too. So the tracks are going to have a big say in this, I feel like, in terms of how much qualifying there is and how much practice there is and et cetera. But I don't know. What's your take? Because, I mean, let's face it, the tracks are severe stakeholders in the sport.
I think that there's opportunity there for the tracks to do other things, and that's where NASCAR could work with them too, to help promote regional racing, similar to, you know, Martinsville was bringing the modifieds back this year. It kind of got jacked up with the COVID thing, but they were bringing modifieds back for the first time in forever, and some fans are going crazy over it. I'm still waiting to see if people show up or not for it. But have a K&N race, have a modified race, have a late model race. You know, give these local guys a chance to run on these national level tracks. That gives you an opportunity to have a different day or add a day and have fans come that aren't your normal fans that are coming to the Cup stuff. I was watching during the rain delay the history of the 600 and all the crazy crap that Humpy used to do. You know, you work for it. Eddie Gossage in Texas works for it. He always is coming up with things outside the box to get the fans into the stands. So it's going to cut into their revenue a little bit, but in all honesty, I mean, you've been to Charlotte for the 600 for qualifying Thursday pole night. The parking lots are not overflowing, let's put it that way. It's like summer shootout. You know, there's a couple thousand folks in the stands, if we're lucky. And so yes, it's a day that the gate would be open, but I don't know that you're talking about millions of dollars if you're holding a pole qualifying night or if you have an extra day of practice. It's the race days are when you really make your money at the attendance level. So as long as NASCAR is still sharing the monies the same, whether you're running a 2-day show or a 3-day show, which I believe they do, then I don't know that the tracks are really going to have that much heartburn over it.
And let's face it, NASCAR owns a lot of the tracks too now. So there's also that aspect. But I agree with a lot of your points. I don't know how much... Obviously, the tracks did a lot of the television money, but I don't know how much, like, say you have an ARCA race at, just throughout Martinsville. I don't know how much, especially Martinsville, because, I mean, I don't know how much fans it's going to draw. And like you said, they were going to do that with the modifieds this year. Unfortunately, that got canceled because of COVID, but I don't know how much they're going to draw, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I guess it's a... error, you know, kind of error, trial and error, and practice it out. But
if you look at, let's say they run an ARCA race Friday, you have that instead of a Cup practice on Friday.
Right.
The stands are going to be about the same for an ARCA race or for a Cup practice. So that's where I'm like, you're maybe adding something and drawing some fans that you don't normally draw in, and you can maybe roll that into a ticket bundle or a ticket package to where you get a little more out of the fans for that extra race. So I think it gives you an opportunity, gives the tracks an opportunity if they want to take advantage of it. But I still think they're going to be getting the same TV money one way or the other. And so in the grand scheme, I don't think it's going
to
hurt them.
Well, I think NASCAR is definitely going to, and probably still will towards, you know, once we get back to the regular schedule, is going to do a lot of trial and error this year and see what works, see what doesn't work. And I mean, look, part of the media, I want as much access as I can get to the drivers. Unfortunately this year, that's obviously, I'm going to this year thinking I'm not going to interview anyone one-on-one in person. I mean, that's just the way it is with the way the world's going. But in you know, when things get back to normal with the way they were, I mean, we get a lot of access to the drivers. And fans do too. So I don't know. I don't know what NASCAR is going to end up deciding on going forward, you know, because a lot of these, some of these, I'm trying to phrase this the right way. Some of these weekends are kind of shit shows, because one week you have, you know, a 2-day show, then a 3-day show, you know, it's all over the place some weeks. And that's not bad. That's not bad at all. You know, it's kind of changes it up, but, I think one thing we can agree on, Neff, is midweek races, kind of switching this up to the next part, because last night's event, I don't know what the numbers were at the time of recording, at 9 o'clock in the morning, but I mean, it was on FS1, so, you know, if they're on Fox, it would be way, way higher, being on primetime television, network cable, but, look, last night was definitely a shoot in the arm, I think, for NASCAR.
Absolutely. We've been championing the midweek race for a long time. This beat that into us a little bit last night, that it's the first time since Richard won his 200th in 1984.
Yep.
And that they had never, ever in the history of NASCAR had two races at the same track in a week. So that was pretty crazy. But yeah, I have all four midweek races. It gets us on in prime time during the week, so it's an opportunity. But again, we run into the challenge that weather can be an issue, but weather can always be an issue with live sports. So I thought it was great. I thought the racing was great. I am fully on board with as many midweek shows as they want to do.
Yeah, and I also think the midweek, I know you want longer races, but I think the midweek races could be shorter. Yes, like last night. I think last night was the perfect distance for that race. You know, 500 kilometers, essentially 311, 312 miles. So, look, we didn't even get to finish the whole race. And I think that's the only thing that kind of, you know,
kind of, was a bummer.
Yeah, it was a bummer that we didn't get to finish it, because it was going to be a good finish, I feel like, because you would have had the front row of Denny Hamlin on old tires and Kyle Busch with a damaged right front fender. I don't think either one of them were going to win that race.
I think Harvick was going to go back to back.
Harvick or Keselowski, I thought. Or maybe even Eric Jones, because Eric Jones is pretty good there. But so I think Hamlin and Kyle are both lucky that it rained, especially Hamlin, because he had old tires. But I think this is a perfect experiment, and we're going to have, you know, what, 3 or 4 of these in the next couple of weeks, including last night. We got next week at Charlotte, which is also a 500-kilometer race, which is essentially the same length as an Xfinity race there. And then also you got, what is it? Is it at Martinsville in 2 weeks? So that's going to be interesting too, being under the lights.
No doubt. It's going to be cool. I understand that I am in the vast majority of wanting longer races. I fully acknowledge that. But it's, again, I'm with you. I love the idea of midweek races. And I hope that we can spread them out to different racetracks. That's the only part of this thing that we've got now. I'm happy with it. Hope we do more of it. But I'm also hoping we'll get some more exposure to, again, and we always throw out all the names, Irwindale, you know, Hickory, South Boston, places like that. Stafford would be great to see them run a cup race. But let's take baby steps. So let's start on getting, you know, 12 to 15 midweek races on a schedule. Then we'll worry about where they take place.
Yeah, and last night's race was, I mean, again, 20 laps short, but it was 2 hours, 42 minutes. And that's with 11 cautions, which is abnormal for a lot of races. So, you know, you're looking at like a 2 hour, 40 minute, you know, race, which is for a midweek race, I feel like that's a perfect length. It's essentially the same length as a baseball game. And if we could get that, you know, not weekly, but ever so often going forward, that'd be great. I'm a fan of midweek races, and I thought it was a good test run for NASCAR as we have more of these in the next month. But Neff, before we get to Sunday's action, because we got a lot to talk about still, support for the French Edge Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for those family jewels. Now, Neff, over the past couple weeks, I've asked you about some incidents, and I feel like as men, most men probably, have had incidents with manscaping injuries. Myself included, in college once, not fun. You know, I was getting ready to go out on a Saturday, maybe it was a Friday night, you know, regardless, and you would have thought I hit an artery or something down there. Not fun at all. You know, and razor bumps, never fun. You know, manscaping is a real thing, and some of it can definitely hurt and have lasting injuries and lasting effects on you. But I'm going to help you, and I'm going to help myself, too, because the Manscaped engineering team has spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. Their third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. Manscaping accidents are finally in the rear-view mirror.
But I'll tell you what, we talk about this being a premium trimmer. There are many reasons it is premium. They started with the battery. The battery on it will now last up to 90 minutes, so you can take longer to make sure you are extra closely trimmed down below. You can also take it on vacations with you. If you're going to have a long weekend and you want to keep her touched up through the whole weekend for the ladies, you'll have 90 minutes of shave time without having to plug back into your charger. One of the coolest features that they have is an LED light that illuminates your grooming area. You ever work on cars late at night and have one of those halogen lights that lights up the engine bay? It's just like that on the Lawnmower 3.0. It lights up the whole grooming area and gives you a greater chance at doing more precise trimming. They've also upgraded their motor. It's a 7,000 RPM quiet stroke technology motor. It will make sure to give you crisp, clean cuts without having to rip the hairs out.
For sure. And if you are listening to us speak right now, right this second, I want you to experience it firsthand for yourself and trim that junk yours. Neff, we got care packages in the mail a couple weeks ago. I've used mine. Great stuff. Worked well. So I want our listeners to experience that as well. So in order to do that, get 20% off and free shipping with code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FRONTSTRETCH.
Your balls will thank you.
They absolutely will, Neff. So let's get into Sunday's action because we're not done. We got a lot to talk about still, I feel like. You know, in general, maybe we should have brought this up at the beginning. Obviously, there's a lot of risk. We've talked about that in weeks leading up to this race, especially when we knew there was going to be a race at Darlington on Sunday. But it seemed like everyone followed safety protocol. No one had a temperature. No one got, like, escorted or, you know, kicked out or removed from the track. I thought the way that this worked was pretty well for NASCAR, and it's good for them being the first four back if and it looked like everything went well.
Yeah, first off, before we go any further, we got to give a huge shout-out to Kerry Tharp and the gang at Darlington. There was a lot of pressure on them. That NASCAR being the first sport coming back, all of the eyes of all major sports were looking at these guys, and they had to make sure they dotted every I, crossed every T. They had to make sure that they had everything lined up, and they followed all of the guidelines, and they nailed it. I honestly thought that there were a couple things that might have been a little excessive, like no high fives or handshakes or anything for the winning team after they won the race. I mean, the guys have been sitting there, you know, doing tire stops and basically sweating all over each other all night, and then you're not going to let them even high five each other when you win a race. But for the most part, everybody had masks on, with the exception of Harvick after winning on Sunday. I was surprised that there wasn't some kind of a fine for him coming out without a mask on. And kudos to Denny for that mask last night, by the way. It was hilarious and creepy all at the same time. But that was a good look. But yeah, the Darlington folks, they did an amazing job. And kudos to everybody that was there for following the rules, understanding what it meant to do it right this first time. And I think everybody nailed it. And now they've laid down the gauntlet. The rest of the pro sports are going to have to try to meet or exceed those expectations.
Yeah, and it's going to be tougher for other sports. That's one, you know, I guess, good part of racing is that the competitors are in the cars, but then you got to worry about the pit crew. But even then, I mean, you saw pictures of it, and obviously there's, you know, we've talked about this in the past, but 16 people per team at the most. Some teams probably had less, but, you know, 16 people at the most, only one representative for the team. So obviously the pictures, only three photographers on site, so the pictures were definitely limited, you know, compared to your normal weekend. But it looked like everyone was social distancing pretty well, even while pushing the car. You know, you had one guy in the right front, left front, right rear, left rear, maybe a guy in the middle, but not, you know, to steer the car. But I thought it looked at least, you know, from as much, you know, perspective that we could give based off pictures and videos, everyone did a good job. I do know that I think it was around lap 215 or so on Sunday that there was a bad view of the spotters. It was a camera, it was a side camera down the front stretch. Probably a couple.
Yeah, hundred, it was shooting all the way from turn one.
Yeah, probably a couple hundred yards away from them for sure. And it looked like they were on top of each other. Terrible look. Terrible camera angle too, because then, you know, Hannah Newhouse, and I saw a video from Rick Ware Racing too. They had a video of the spotters where it said the spotters had been social distance the whole time. You know, so some 6 to 10 feet apart in some cases.
Yeah.
You know, and then I listened to Door Bumper Clear this week, and that was entertaining because obviously Brett Griffin's very vocal.
Brett had his panties in a wad over that whole deal.
Yeah, him and TJ Majors and Freddie Kraft both gave their opinion on that, confirmed that no one was really more than, you know, 6-7 feet away, unless they had to go to the bathroom or something and they had to get by people.
Yeah, somebody had to borrow a Sharpie or something, yeah, or another net. But I thought it was kind of cool when, and I can't remember who it was, I think it was Tab Boyd, took a picture of them before the race started. And I realized they had actually put up a banner for each of the spotters that was like a professionally printed banner that had their car number and the spotter name allotting off the distance that they were allowed to have in the seats. And I mean, that was an attention to detail that I never expected to see.
I didn't see that.
And I thought that was really cool.
I didn't see that, so I'll have to go back and look. But it looked like, you know, from all aspects, NASCAR did about as good a job as you can. And definitely a success getting the season started, because now we've got two races next week, and the season's really going to start to pick up here over the next month or so. So, now Kevin Harvick dominated the race. He led, you know, the first stage, it was Chevy and Brad Keselowski. But then from stage two on, Harvick led 159 of 200 laps. Harvick's obviously really good at Darlington. I believe last night was his ninth straight top 10 at the track, dating back to 2013, his last race there, with Childress. What do you think that says about Ronnie Childers, though, setting that car up? Because obviously we talked about it earlier, but these guys didn't know what they were going to do. They didn't know what kind of track they were going to see. They're going to see a green track. But I think it says a lot about Ronnie to set up a dominating car. But no,
yeah,
practice.
We talked about it earlier, that these guys have got all the tools at their disposal. And the simulations and the notes and everything that they've done, pull down rigs, shaker rigs, all that kind of stuff. So they're usually about 95% ready when they get to the track. But if you have a history of running well at the track, then you have a baseline that you know you're going to run well with. Where these other guys are showing up with a car that they know is what they've run before, but they may have run 15th or 20th.
Right.
So Childress is showing up with a car set up the way he knows in the past has worked well. And sure enough, it did. And the other thing I give kudos to those guys on, they turned that car around in 3 days with a new wrap to bring it back for last night, which was amazing. But yeah, I thought for a second there I was going to be a genius going in late last night, because last week on the podcast, I had picked Keselowski and Harvick to be the winners of Sunday and Wednesday. Mind you, I had picked Keselowski on Sunday, but I would have still bragged about it if he'd have won on Wednesday and Harvick on Sunday, but he didn't seem to have it. But yeah, Harvick, I mean, that car worked day and night, because as we mentioned earlier, they ran daytime on Sunday and nighttime last night, and they had that car. They had to chase it and work on it a little bit more last night, but it was right at the end. And I think he had a real chance to win with it.
Yeah, it took him a while to get to the front last night, but once he did, he was a mainstay. And Harvick, like you said, it was very impressive that they got that car turned around. Now, obviously, if this was regular, you know, protocol and teams had to go to the, you know, the winning car and certain amount of cars had to go to the R&D center, they wouldn't be able to turn that around. But they did. and they did the wrap. The wrap was done, I saw, by Monday afternoon. And the car looked ready to go, obviously, by late Monday. I'm sure they did some stuff on Tuesday to it. But, yeah, Harvick, I mean, that's his wheelhouse. Him, Denny Hamlin, Eric Jones has proven to be really good at Darlington. Those are your guys that are going to run at the front of that track and are probably going to be battling for the win come the first race of the playoffs in September, Labor Day weekend. So, not a surprise that Harvick won. Just like you, I picked Denny Hamlin to win one of these races, but that was Sunday, not Wednesday. So, my pick of Kurt Busch last night did not work out very well. but he had a good race on Sunday, so, you know, you would have thought it would have been better. Now, if moving on here, though, Alex Bowman, he surprised me this year. I know last year we talked, you know, he was getting hot during the summer, won in Chicago, obviously. This year, though, it's been like a whole new person, whole new team. That car is fast. You know, think back to California. As soon as that car dropped off, you know, got off the hauler, everyone knew it was the car to beat, dominated the race, led 110 of 200 laps. I say Alex Bowman's the best driver at Chevy this year so far. You say what?
At Chevy? Well, I mean, obviously, Ganassi hasn't had anybody up there really beating down the door for wins.
Granted, we're only six races in.
So that's leaving you primarily with Hendrick or Childress. And just a quick sidebar on that. If you're at Childress and working on that three car, you better get your act together because that eight team is making you look bad.
We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about Rack.
Austin even made a comment on the radio at one point on Sunday that he wants to go drive for whoever puts that 8 team together. that was funny. But, I mean...
Essentially, you're looking at probably Chase.
William Byron has been looking pretty stout.
But he can't finish races. He only has one top 10.
Right. He can't finish. And Elliott has been, you know, hit or miss, but not really, again, finishing any races. So, yeah. I'd say you're probably right. I'd go with Bowman as the top Chevy driver right now.
Yeah, he's led the most laps at Chevy. He's got the only win for Chevy. Now, granted, we're only six races in and everything can change. And also, he looks to be really good at these, you know, worn-out asphalt, low-grip racetracks. Won at Chicago last year, won at Auto Club this year. Darlington's got very little, grip. So he had a good run on Sunday, finishing second. Last night didn't work out well. He ran over his air hose on pit road, and he had a really bad pit stop. Ended up finishing 18th, I believe. So, that, you know, obviously that's a mistake by him. But I would say he's so far the best driver at Chevy, which bodes well because Chevy is... I mean, Ford's got three wins this year. But Chevy is pretty good, and they're very fast. I would say they might be the front runners for Charlotte. Because I feel like intermediate track set up well for them this year, at least early on. But yeah, I think Bowman's the best driver at Chevy. Now, if you brought up Reddick, though, I know I mentioned him a little bit earlier, but what he was able to do on Sunday at Darlington was anything short of amazing. I mean, he came from the back to the front twice as a rookie, never running a cup lap there. Because remember, there was no practice or qualifying. Finished seventh. I mean, this guy, and if you think back to like Phoenix, he was in second or third when he had a flat tire. He's been really, you know, outperforming, I don't want to say his equipment, but outperforming what other drivers have done at RCR over the past few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. RCR has been struggling to find whatever it is to give them the speed to really contend. You know, I mean, Austin won a 600, but it was a strategy call. It wasn't speed. And you get Tyler Reddick over there, and the next thing you know, he's running with everybody as fast as everybody. So now no more excuses for the three team. You know, if the eight's getting it done, you're getting the same, at least the same equipment. Depending on who you listen to, they would say that the three gets better equipment, right. Which, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't blame them if they did. But, I mean, you're going to have to, the three is going to have to step up their game, because I feel like Tyler Reddick, you know, he tends to be a little hit or miss, just, again, because he's learning. I mean, it's his first time coming through all these tracks. I look for him when the end of the season rolls around to really put some stuff together, because he tends to be really good the second time through when he has learned what a track needs. And it's going to put pressure on everybody, I think, in the Chevy camp, because dude has got no fear.
No.
I mean, that was again, we talked about the first lap on Sunday, and they go down into one, and I'm like, okay, everybody's minding their P's and Q's, and I'm like, whoa, who's that? And I'm like, Reddick is three wide on the apron going through one and two. First time in a Cup car on that track, and that's what he's going for. And I'm like, yeah, that's really the stupidest thing you could possibly do. Good job. Way to pull that off. You know, it's one of those like an NBA guy throwing up some bomb shot, and you're like, oh my God, that's terrible. And then it goes in, and you're like, yeah, but it was a good shot.
Right.
Like, yeah,
he's got a ton of talent.
He started off well. He's got a ton of talent, but, you know, again, we're six races in. Let's see where we're at when we're 20 races in.
Right, and that's always kind of been the case with Reddick. You think back to, 2015, 2016, when he was running the BKR. He would be flashy, but inconsistent. 2018, his first full year in Xfinity, same thing with Junior Motorsports. Ultimately went on to win the championship and had a dominating performance at the second half of the race at Homestead. Last year, he took it to a whole new level of consistency at RCR. Made, 26 or 27 top 10s. Led the regular season points pretty much the whole year. Won the championship. Arguably the best driver of the year. Him, obviously, we have the big three, Seabell and Cole Custer as well last year. But Reddick's making this work in Cup. And, you know, we came into this year not knowing what to expect because, like we said, the equipment. Daniel Hemric's a good driver. We've talked about this a couple times on this podcast. But he's never been able to win at the Cup level. And wherever Reddick's been, where Hemric's been, you know, BKR, remember they raced together, then RCR, he's been able to win. And Hemric's not been able to win. So Reddick's a good talent. He's fun to watch, man. Ripping the wall. He runs higher than Kyle Larson does. So that's going to be fun to watch, like Homestead coming up here in a few weeks. He's fun to watch. And look, he's in the 8 car now. And who knows, maybe he'll stay there for a long time. Maybe his whole career. Who knows? You never know where it'll take you. I think he gets with a bigger team, though, eventually.
We'll see. I mean, that's one of those deals where he has the potential to write his own check. From where he's at, if he's sitting there and he starts ripping off some wins and he has a shot at a championship for Childress,
he's probably sick.
I mean, they're crazy to let him leave,
right?
But at the same time, if you're taking a shot at winning a championship with Childress and Mr. H comes knocking or Tony Stewart comes knocking, you gotta listen,
right?
And we all know that, you know, Richard's pockets aren't as deep as some of these other guys. So hanging on to people is more of a bit of loyalty than it's actually, you know, a cash game. So, again, we'll see. Reddick's one of those guys that I think would honor the fact that he was given his opportunity by Richard,
right,
and would stick with him if the opportunity presents itself. But at the same time, if he's offered just some sick amount of money, you can't blame him for taking it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But I think Reddick, he has the potential to be a future Cup champion. We'll see if that comes to fruition in the future. But
absolutely.
Neff, also someone who has a lot of talent and who's been overlooked. And, you know, we've been going an hour here, so I want to hit on these kind of quickly. We have a few more points I want to talk about. John Hunter Nemechek. you know, last night didn't go as planned.
I was just saying, you're talking about a day and night difference of races. Holy cow.
Yeah, last night didn't go as planned, being the first two cautions, wrecking in both. But, you know, you got to preface that by saying Sunday was probably... I know they've, you know, front rows won at Pocono via fog. This was the best they've ever been, in my opinion. This was the best performance they've ever had at a track other than a short track or a super speedway. You know, he finished, what was it, ninth, which was the team's first top 10 on an intermediate track ever, and the first finish inside the top 10 on a track other than a super speedway in more than 3 years. So I think, you know, John Hunter, he's been fast all year. He finally started to get the finishes. You know, obviously the ninth at Darlington, the first race last night, as we said, didn't go as planned, but he's been flashy this year too. Maybe not, you know, top 15, top 10 flashy, but he's been pretty consistent.
Completely agree. He's been a pleasant surprise to you. I mean, I've been following John Hunter as long as I can remember. And, used to interview him a lot as he was coming up. And he would have those moments, but he didn't really string a lot together. And as he has matured and as he has moved up, he strings more and more together. And I think we'll see that he will ultimately be an even better driver as he matures more in the Cup Series. So, but yeah, I felt terrible for him last night just because it was one of those deals that I don't think they hit on it. I think they were a wee bit too tight last night, and he was fighting a loose car, and then somebody gets behind him, and the next thing you know, you stuff the back end into the wall, and after that, you're chasing it. So that was, that didn't work out well for him. But yeah, I'm with you. The performance on Sunday was unreal for that team to pull that off at this point of the season, and they have every right to be bragging and be all puffed up about it. Unfortunately, you only get 2 days to enjoy it before you have to go run another race right now.
Yeah, and then you're only as good as your last race, and obviously that didn't turn out well. But I think there's going to be more good runs for Nemechek. I don't know about, like, top 9 or 10 runs, because let's face it, that team doesn't have a ton of funding at all. On average, 25th to 30th place team. Last year with David Reagan, it finished, I think, 30th in points. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at a team where he's overachieving at right now. Now, someone who also overachieved, I thought on Sunday, was Matt Kenseth. You know, I've tooted his horn the past couple weeks on the podcast since Ganassi's kind of hired him, being the right fit, the right guy for the job to take over that 42 car. Based on all of, you know, his whole career. I mean, he's one of the, I think, top 15, top 20 drivers of all time. He goes out, no practice, no qualifying, finishes 10th in his first race in 18 months in a package he'd never raced in. I was impressed by Matt Kenseth, too. And I think he could win a race by the end of the year.
I agree. I think there's a very decent chance he wins a race before the end of the year. And, again, he did those Matt Kenseth things that we expected him to do, you know. Excuse me. He gets out there, he takes his time feeling out what he's got, makes it better, and then at the end of the race, when you need him, he's there contending. And he did the same thing on Sunday. In all honesty, last night he was running, you know, top 10 a good chunk of the night, mm-hmm. and then had a tire go down, and however that happened, and that kind of ended the night for him, contention-wise, but he's Matt Kenseth. He knows what he needs his cars to feel like, and he knows how to race them. And he's very good at communicating with his crew chief to get that car to do what he wants it to do. And if the crew chief will give it to him, he'll be in contention to win most every week.
Yeah, and someone who else is back, Neff, is Ryan Newman. You know, he finished 15th on Sunday, 14th last night. Could definitely tell he was back last night when him and Chris Buescher elected to elected to stay out. There was reports of rain, so people were thinking, oh, you know, Newman might win this race because it would have at that point been called, being past halfway. He was racing the hell out of people. Classic Newman. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But two good races back. He has four straight top 15s now, dating back to Homestead last year. Because he finished top 10 in Daytona, you know, obviously going airborne across the finish line. I was on a Zoom call with him last Thursday, and that seems like an eternity ago because of all the stuff that's happened in the past week. But, you know, he kind of detailed for the first time everything that happened that night and what's led up to his return, and ultimately now two races into his return. He's done a pretty good job. And obviously last year, same thing. He outperformed that equipment. And Chris Buescher, I mean, you're kind of comparing the two right now, and Newman's doing a fair better job, at least in his two races back, than Buescher has. Although Buescher kind of got wrecked twice on Sunday, once by Jimmy Johnson, which we'll get into here in a quick minute. But I'm impressed with Newman, too, and coming back, getting two top 15s.
I mean, it was Newman. That's kind of what you expect. He ends up somewhere between 10th and 15th every week. And that's what it takes to point your way into the playoffs. So it'll be a little tougher hill to climb this year just because I'm missing some races. But he's gonna be there, and once or twice he'll have one of those nights where everything lines up and he has a real shot at a win. But I thought when he stayed out, I'm like, this is gonna be classic Newman right here. And it was so fun to watch because I don't know, 15, 20 laps into that run, Newman is just finally gotten past, and he's running like second or third. And you look at the rundown, and Buescher is 27th. And they started next to each other. It's like, he can get everything out of that car that he needs to get out of it, and he's the toughest guy to pass in the sport. So it's you got what you expected when he was up there. And, yeah, I think he's back. I think he's I don't know if he's 100%, but he's darn close to it. And it was refreshing to see him back on the track.
Yeah, he's also fun to watch. You know, I said Reddick's fun to watch, as is Newman. Now, quick enough, one of your takes on two mistakes made kind of in the same part of the track very early in the race on Sunday. We can start with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. because that was obviously first lap. So, homeboy tried going four wide off turn two at Darlington, at a track where it's tough to go three wide off turn two, let alone four wide. Not going to work. Got into Corey LaJoie and ultimately turned the 47 sideways into the inside wall. What was he thinking?
He wasn't. I mean, that was obvious. He was not thinking. He's feeling like he's back there. To not necessarily quote him, but other folks that run back that way. He's back there with the squirrels, and he's trying to get out of them as quick as he can. And he thought he was going to be able to make up a bunch of ground quickly. And so he put himself in a situation that he shouldn't have. And when you're driving on flat ground and guys are on banking and there's dust and dirt and debris because nobody's run a lap in anger on a track in forever, it was really, again, I talked about it when Reddick was three wide in the middle of the corner. I'm like, it was not a smart move at all. And Reddick pulled it off and Stenhouse didn't. And, you know, he gets harangued for it. And rightly so. But at the same time, you know he's giving you 100% all the time. And you appreciate that out of your driver. We remember before he won his championships in Xfinity, Roush had to bench him for a while because he goes too hard sometimes and tears up too much stuff. And that's, unfortunately, it's kind of in that kind of a mode right now where he needs to check it up a little bit for a couple weeks, get a solid, you know, top 15 run, and then we can get back into, you know, pulling off some crazy maneuvers to try to get spots on lap one.
Yeah, I saw so many tweets on Sunday. I kind of feel bad for him because obviously Ricky has this notion of being the guy that wrecks a lot, and that happened with Roush, obviously. But it looks like it. I mean, this was just a bonehead move, unfortunately. And he mentioned it in a post-accident video on Twitter, and I think he put on Instagram too. And he's just embarrassed. He's embarrassed for himself, for doing that to his team. And you got to wonder what Tad and Jody were thinking, because you have 10 weeks off, and then, granted, Kroger got a lot of TV time, and probably more TV time had he not wrecked the first lap, but, you know, it's super disappointing when, you know, sports based off results. So, you know, I kind of feel bad for him, because out of all people, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and that's when, you know, I saw this on Twitter a lot, that's when you know NASCAR's back, is when Ricky Stenhouse wrecks, so, you know, unfortunate, but is what it is. Last topic for me, Neff, before we get out of here, because we've been going a long time. Jimmy Johnson, similar mistake. You know, I brought up Chris Busch earlier, getting wrecked twice on Sunday. This was one of those times. Final lap of the first stage. Jimmy Johnson could cruise to the stage win, but decided he needed to pass Chris Busch, or try to pass Chris Busch. Hit him. You know, Fox, Jeff Gordon specifically, obviously has stakes at Hendrick. Tried blaming this on Chris Buescher, but there was no, it wasn't Chris Buescher's fault at all. Jimmy got into him, got into his left rear, Buescher corrected it, came down, and then Jimmy turned, just like Stenhouse, into the inside wall, and finished 38th. I feel bad for Jimmy, because this would have been his third stage win, and he had a car that, you know, maybe NASCAR, you know, NASCAR's back, Jimmy Johnson's back, maybe, you never know what could have happened, because he was flawless up until that point of that stage.
I was stunned. I'm not gonna lie. You envision Jimmy Johnson as being this uber precise driver that never puts a wheel wrong, can put himself on the edge and do things that so many other drivers can't do. And I saw it as it was unfolding before me, and I was just like, where's he going?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, back off, let him clear the corner and pass him when you're going through 3 and 4. And he pushed it, which basically got him so close to the rear bumper on Buescher that Buescher breaks loose. The thing bounces off the wall, which throws him back into Jimmy's car and wrecked him. And it was one of the most rookie moves I have ever seen out of the 7-time champion.
Right.
And I was at a loss for words when I saw it happen, because I was just like, that, there's no way that actually just happened, but it did. And I mean, I was sitting there looking at that going, man, Jimmy is going to have a real shot at winning this race today. And then he ends up finishing 38th on the hook.
Yeah, I think I yelled that when it happened. Jimmy wrecked, because I was not expecting that. Jimmy's, you know, an aggressive driver, but there was no, I mean, the likelihood of Chris Buescher winning that race, I mean, very slim to none, you know. There was a higher potential Jimmy was going to have not to worry for him, you know, about Buescher for even a position on the lead lap. Because, obviously, Buescher was going to lap down. Only 90 laps in. So, I was as surprised as you. And something you don't see out of Jimmy. But let's think about it now. You know, Jimmy, over the past 3-4 years, really hasn't had that many competitive cars, battles for the wins, you know, chances where he could have won. But when he has, Neff, it hasn't turned out well. You think of the Roval, 2018, him and Truex going under the inner loop, where he dove it on in there, wheel hopped, spun, and ultimately spun Truex by happenstance, because he was just a victim of that crash. You know, you think of I saw a picture of these four incidents the other day, and I think it was Texas. I want to say the spring race last year, where he won the pole. I think he spun, and then he came back to finish top five. Still, who knows what would have happened had he spun. Then there was Indy last year, where he needed to win and had a good car. I don't think he would have won because Kevin Harvick was dominating, but he was in the top five when this happened. Piled off into turn one, got loose underneath William Byron, wrecked. Pretty hard. And then on Sunday, where there was just no need for that wreck, for that to put, you know, to put that much focus on lapping Buescher. Sure, William Byron was half a second behind, but half a second in a half a lap, you're not going to lose that if you're Jimmy Johnson. So who knows? I also didn't think he would have crashed on that lap. So I was surprised. Bonehead moved by both drivers, Stenhouse and Johnson. But I think Jimmy, I mean, he got a top 10 last night. Chevy's definitely in the right direction. Hendrick's probably the best team, like I said earlier. I think he wins at least one race this year.
I mean, we race at Dover. So anytime we're racing.
And Martinsville.
anytime Dover is on a schedule, I feel like it's a shot. Yes and no at Martinsville. I feel like the whole Hendrick mystique with Martinsville has kind of faded over the last 4 or 5 years. I haven't felt like they've really had a shot outside of Chase when he got dumped by him. But for the most part, they haven't. I mean, it used to be when they showed up, Jeff Gordon or Jimmy Johnson was going to win the race. Right. Everybody else was just running, you know. And even when Junior ran with him, he was up front more than not, which you couldn't say that at many other tracks. So we'll see. But they go to Dover, and anytime Jimmy Johnson has a car that's remotely capable at Dover, you got to keep your eye on him.
And Texas this weekend in Charlotte, and you know this next two races at Charlotte. There's a lot of races where you could be competitive this year. But Neff, speaking of Charlotte, we got a lot of racing coming up. I guess we can start off just going in order. We got the Coke 600 on Sunday. We're getting to predictions here. I'll go with mine first this week. Look, Martin Truex Jr.'s made a... We talked about him not doing very well this year. Only 2 top 10s, no top 5s in 6 races. But over the past handful of years, he's made Charlotte his playground. Whether it be the Roval, you know, obviously we just talked about the 2018 incident. Or specifically the Oval. And the 600. I'm going Martin Truex Jr. to win the Coke 600 this Sunday. What you got?
I'm going to take Kyle Busch on a late race pass of Chase Elliott to win the 600.
Oh, man. That'd be another, you know, that's another missed opportunity with no fans if that were to happen. Because yep. There would be a lot of rowdy folks, no pun intended. Neff, then on Monday we got the Xfinity race. We got the Xfinity race today. You know, as this podcast comes out, the Xfinity race probably gets started if it runs off at noon. So we don't know what would happen today, but I'll go Harrison Burton. I think he's done a good job this year. He leads the points, has a 2.5 average finish through 4 races, which is among the best ever through 4 races from an Xfinity regular. I got Harrison Burton. Who knows what happens today, though, you know?
I am going to keep the fingers crossed and say Chase Briscoe. And I get into it a little bit later as to why, but Chase needs some good news, and I hope that we can. I hope he can grab that oval victory there at Charlotte to go with his Roval win.
Yeah, hopefully he gets it today, because like you said, I guess you'll talk about it a little later. But tough news out of the Briscoe camp this week. Then on Tuesday, we got a lot of racing coming up. Neff, Tuesday the truck race. Look, Brett Moffitt.
And we know what happens in this one.
Yeah, so Kyle Busch is running, so he'll probably win. He'll also probably win the Xfinity race today. He'll probably also win the Xfinity race on Monday. But Tuesday, look, Kyle Busch, if you pick Kyle Busch, you're just, that's a cheap pick. I'm going Brett Moffitt. He was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Hasn't gotten off to a good start this year in more ways than one on the track. He's fourth in points, but hasn't performed up to expectations. Also, it's his first race back after 2 broken femurs. And he's cleared, so I got Brett Moffitt.
You're completely forgetting about the truck bounty. There's no way Kyle Busch is finishing that race.
Nah. No way. Is that still a thing, though? Is that still a thing?
Because one of the guys going for the bounty is Chase Elliott.
That is true.
Pay attention. Chase Elliott is going to win the truck race after dumping Kyle Busch to take the win.
I don't think so.
I think so. It's a perfect storm, dude. Perfect storm.
It is. I just don't see it happening. Although that will be entertaining if it does. Then, Neff, we got a 300-miler, 310-miler, 500-kilometer race at Charlotte next Wednesday. Look, I think Truex will be again good. At Charlotte, but I'm gonna go get Kevin Harvick because he's proven that he's pretty fast this, you know, start off the year. Only driver with 6 top 10s this year in 6 races. I'll go Kevin Harvick.
I'm gonna go for a first time winner. William Byron is gonna get it done at Charlotte in the sprint race next Wednesday.
He's been fast this year, just not being able to finish races, so that's not a bad pick.
With it being a short race, I think that gives him the opportunity.
Got it. Now, Neff, we've gone long here. Any final I know you said you wanted to bring something up about Briscoe. I know where you're going towards, but any final thoughts?
It's funny, these things come in groups, and this week there was a whole bunch of them, so I just wanted to rattle them off a little bit and let everybody know that the folks at Front Stretch, especially here at the Front Stretch Podcast, are thinking about them. Stan Creekmore, long-time rider, just dedicated guy.
Very nice guy.
Literally slept in his vehicle in the media lot in order to be able to bring coverage to people. And wore his heart on his sleeve. He was quirky. I ain't gonna lie about that. But he would give you the shirt off his back. And just one of the nicest guys. Had heart surgery on the 18th, I believe it was, and passed away yesterday from complications. Baby front, the Loganos and the Hemricks both had babies born in the last week. So thumbs up and congratulations to Joey Logano and Daniel Hemrick and their spouses. The spouse is doing more work than they did. on that same front, horrifically sad news for Chase and Marissa Briscoe. And we were thinking about them. They literally found out the sex of their baby on Monday. And then Tuesday went in for an ultrasound to hear the heartbeat and found out there wasn't one. And I can't even fathom being in Chase's shoes because he was at Darlington FaceTiming his wife when that happened. And I just, God has a plan for when things are going to happen and why things are going to happen. And it isn't for us to question. But we are definitely thinking about Chase and Marissa and praying for them. And last, some great news. Any of you that know any of the pit road guys or pay attention to it, the gas man for Denny Hamlin, Big Daddy Ed Watkins, his wife Vonda has been going under chemotherapy for cancer for the last little bit, and she rang the bell Wednesday morning. So big thumbs up to Vonda for making it through chemo treatments and keeping her fingers crossed that that's the last time she ever has to mess with that junk.
For sure. Yeah, obviously a lot of good news this week, but then also on the flip side, you know, some unfortunate news, whether it be with Chase, who, you know, Chase is a great guy. I've had a lot of, you know, conversation with him. He's been on the podcast twice before, done a lot of interviews with him. Great guy. So I feel terrible for him. And then also Stan, you know, I've definitely talked to Stan, you know, plenty of times in the past. I haven't seen him in a while, and it's very unfortunate that, you know, like you said, he had heart surgery and then complications from that is the result of his death. But I don't know, it's just really sad. But I don't know, I'm kind of speechless. But you know, he's in a better place now. You know, you gotta hopefully think positive through all the negative. But he, like you said, brought a lot to the table. You know, the reaction to his passing yesterday on social media was, you know, widely effective. I mean, you saw Dell Jr. tweet about him. You know, all his peers, his media peers who've covered up and down the road races with him tweet, you know, good words about him. So hopefully Stan knows he was appreciated in the media corps, because I definitely enjoyed my time around him. And speaking of that, while we brought up Stan, you know, I was thinking of this yesterday. Obviously, you know, unfortunately, when anything bad happens, you think of good memories you've had with those people. And it was 2016, is the only time I was able to cover the media tour in Charlotte. And so John Force was at an event at the drag strip. I think that was that the first year they ran the drag strip?
I'm trying to remember when I won the drag strip competition.
Regardless, it was 2016 that him, Antoine Brown, who both NHRA drivers, obviously everyone knows John Forrest and his personality, but myself, Joe Wilkin, and Zach Catanzaretti, both Front Stretch alumni, you know, were there together. And Stan just had this affectious laugh, and it was great, and it made you happy. And, you know, I'm smiling just thinking about it right now. So, you know, when I think of Stan, that's the first thing I think about is that night, because John Forrest is obviously, you know, cracking jokes, and you have Stan laughing, and just fun times. That's a night I'll never forget. So, you know, my thoughts and prayers, our thoughts and prayers, the Front Stretch's thoughts and prayers, out to Chase Briscoe and Stan Creekmore this week. Neff, anything else before we sign off?
only other thing that I can say is I was so excited for drone footage, and I don't know what 12-year-old they hired to run the drone, but they need to fire him. There has to be somebody with racing camera experience that can fly a drone that they can have for the drone person, because it's a rare opportunity. FAA doesn't let you fly drones over crowds.
Right.
So we're at a rare chance here when there's nobody in the stands that they could do some really cool angles and follow the leaders and stuff like that. And homie is flying around, like spinning around the scoring pylon and doing barrel rolls and going down the backstretch when the leaders are coming out of four and stuff like that. There was no value added to the broadcast by the drone, and I was incredibly disappointed with that. Everything else about the broadcast and about the weekend I thought was great. I thought NASCAR set an incredible precedent for the rest of these sports to live up to, but God, that drone dude was terrible. And if Fox is going to have the drone again in Charlotte, please get somebody with racing camera experience to fly the drone, or at least to advise the kid to fly the drone so that we get some cool shots, because there's so many neat things they could do with that, and they didn't do any of them at Darlington.
For sure. Well, Neff, I've had a fun time breaking down Darlington. I'm hoping that weather kind of stays out of the way this weekend at Charlotte, because we were looking at maybe recording this Friday, because I thought both races were going to get rained out. Obviously, Xfinity got rained out till today, but I thought both races were going to get rained out till potentially Friday, and we're going to have to do this Friday night or Saturday morning. Let's hope that doesn't happen next weekend at Charlotte. We'll have a lot to talk about, I'm sure. But until then, we're out.
Deuces.